self-employed means when you don't work, you don't make money. Being a business owner means that even if you don't work, you will make money. I think that as entrepreneurs, it's some sort of badge of honor to not pay ourselves. I didn't pay myself for 5 years. And I'm kind of like, why not?
Do you have some unique things about how your franchise model works that makes it more accessible and affordable for people?
When you think about franchising, most people think about food, or they think about restaurants. What people don't realize is that anything can be a franchise. Franchising really empowers you to build your brand using other people's capital, but not in a way that creates debt. It creates an asset for that person. The franchisee then still gets so much, depending on the brand, so much autonomy in their own market, in their own business. There's only really a couple right ways you can go to scale your business. You can.
Hey there. Welcome back to Success Rewritten. I'm your host, Emily Lomenzo Washkovic, and today's episode features Jamie Stigliano, the owner and founder of Diva Dance. Diva Dance is a dance fitness business that started in New York and now has over 50 franchise locations. Jamie got real and shared what she did when her business bank account overdrafted by $10,000. And we also talked about how she currently runs her health like a business. She knew that there was something she needed to change if she wanted to have longevity and be able to have amazing times with her girls decades in the future. Let's give our conversation a listen. Well, everyone, welcome back to Success Rewritten. Today's interview is with Jamie Stigliano, the founder of Diva Dance. And Jamie and I have known each other since 2020. Man, you have been on a huge journey. And honestly, you were years into your entrepreneurship when we first met. So Jamie, take us back. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your entrepreneurial story.
Well, thanks for having me on. And I'm so excited for your next journey in this amazing show and excited to be part of it. So the story of Diva Dance really started when I was a young budding music executive. And I was actually pre-executive. I wouldn't have called myself an executive at that point. But, you know, young New York City gal looking for something fun to do after work, trying to meet new people, looking for a fun fitness option. And I went and signed up for a dance class at an amazing studio in New York City that is really world renowned, but their sole purpose is really to train dancers to become Beyonce's backup dancer or be on Broadway. And I was neither. I'm still neither. And I walked out of that class just defeated, you know, frustrated. No one talked to me. I didn't know the song. The instructor didn't really teach it. They just demonstrated it. And people were competing. It was very competitive. And that's not what I knew dance to be like. And, you know, really the beautiful part about this is just the on the corner of 57th and Broadway in New York City, I made the decision that I'm just going to teach my own classes. Now, this is important because I didn't intend to have a brand. I didn't intend to make this my primary income. And I definitely never intended to franchise. I just wanted a class that was everything that I wanted it to be. Accessible, fun, confidence building, meeting new people. And that's really where I got started. I just started teaching my own classes after work once a week, but I just never stopped. And I think that's the moral of the story is I've just never stopped. I started teaching classes and other than a couple maternity leaves over the last 5 years, where I took a few weeks off, I just haven't stopped. And, you know, I did that as a side thing. And over time, over the, you know, many years of doing this in New York City, where I really just did it for my own fun and benefit, I was also making money. And I was looking at it like, wait a minute, this is my like handbag money. This is the extra money you need as a New York City gal. You know, you need to get your hair done money. You need the Hamptons money. You need the girls trip money. And you know, I had this little side income. This is before side hustles were a thing, by the way. It kind of like wasn't really a thing. And, you know, I think now we even call it like manicure money at the time. It's like, oh, this is my manicure money. And now I hear they're called like Venmo money. Like it's your Venmo money. But, you know, I did that on the side and never intending to franchise, never intending to make a real brand out of it. But I knew I had something when I was able to not be there because I was building my primary career and I was able to train other instructors to create that same experience. And so fast forward, you know, I spent 18 years in the music industry. And as I was kind of nearing the end of that and really starting to take stock, when you've been in a career for that long, you know, there comes a point where you're like, all right, let me just check in. Is this what I want to do like the rest of the time? Or, you know, is there something more or different in me that I could then, you know, do that little pivot move and move to something different? And so The key on this story is that I didn't know what I wanted to do next. I just knew I needed to exit the music business. I was really responsible for making rappers and pop stars rich and famous. And I didn't feel like that was bringing out the best in me, but I had this little hobby business that was bringing out the best in me. And so before I really decided to, I didn't know what I wanted to do next, but I knew I needed to get out of the music business. And I said, well, you know what, let me just, what if I gave Diva Dance like the best I have to offer, my full energy, my full attention, my full marketing brain, my full strategic mind? What could that do with this thing? So I'll just do this until I figure out my next thing. Well, this has been my next thing. And so that's when I made that decision to transition out of the music industry. It wasn't a hard cut. It was an over time. And that's really important to the story because financially and others. But that's really kind of how we got here. It was just me wanting a class that inspired confidence, built community, fun. And that's really, I just never stopped.
Well, there's so many things that I love about your story and your journey, but the beginning and the launch really is all about you filling a need that you had that you couldn't find anywhere else. And that enthusiasm you had became infectious. And that's how the community kind of kept building, which that's like your personality side. Right. People will understand after watching this exactly why that grew quickly. But on the business like acumen side of it, you had very little overhead in the beginning. You were so smart and strategic about not looking for your own space. Can you just share with everyone more about that?
I don't know that it was strategic as much as just necessity. And I think entrepreneurs, they try to create perfect situations for themselves. And I just was like, I just need to teach a class. My very first, for years and years, I still don't have a dedicated brick and mortar in New York City. We rent from existing spaces. And what I found was nobody cares. They don't care that I don't have Kiehl's products in the shower. They don't care that we don't have a, neon sign marquee. I mean, definitely those things. We do have some studios that have a dedicated studio now, and that's part of our growth. But people want to dance. They want a low pressure, fun dance class experience. And, listen, I've been in some pretty gnarly studios where there's like, random ladders in the room. And there's like, there's like a kid's taekwondo class coming in right after. And, definitely like if you're very into like aesthetics and like brand vibes, it's challenging sometimes. And we've done a lot to kind of combat that and make it feel like Diva Dance no matter where we are. But, I just wanted that environment, and I didn't have the capital or the time to go all in on like a dedicated brick and mortar. It turns out I didn't need to. So that was less of a, like, I love that we're calling it strategic move. It was more just necessity, and it turns out it worked.
Well, in your honesty throughout the years about how financial decisions have like kind of driven things, I think has been so helpful for other entrepreneurs because let's say you want to start a yoga studio. Like, it might not be the best idea to look for a space right away. Maybe you need to first see if you can even get people to show up for a class. And I think sometimes we have this idea in our head of like, well, if I'm a real entrepreneur or if I'm like really doing this thing, and there's so many phases and levels to evolving a business. Can you share a little bit about that next big journey, which was when you decided to franchise and really go beyond just teaching instructors, but like having other people carry out the brand? How did you know you were ready for that?
Well, I knew I was ready to expand when I could teach other people to teach how I taught. But the other thing I knew is that I started doing these bachelorette parties in New York City. Gals would come to New York City. They would book a Diva Dance party. And at those parties, of course, I taught all of them. And if you ask my husband, for 10 years more, every Saturday, I was teaching Diva Dance bachelorette parties every Saturday from like 2 to 5 every week. And I'm schlepping like champagne on the subway and I'm like getting cupcakes at the random bodega. And, I'm teaching these parties. But as I was doing that, these were folks from other cities and they were saying, oh my God, this is so fun. This would do so well in Kansas City. This would do so well in Columbus, Ohio. And I'm like, I don't know. And meanwhile, I have my primary career, which is in the music industry. In my mind, I'm like, that's cute. Yeah, San Diego, that'd be cool. But then again, there was that thing that clicked where I'm like, what if I could bring this to other places? But there's only really a couple right ways you can go to scale your business, especially in a fitness or wellness business. You can do licensing where you license people to use your brand to operate and to teach their own classes. You can open more locations yourself, which takes a lot of capital, or you can franchise, which still takes capital, but a different kind of capital. Franchising really empowers you to build your brand using other people's capital, but not in a way that creates debt. It creates an asset for that person. And so as I started to learn the differences between those three kind of paths on the road, franchising was a natural, it made perfect sense for me because A, financially helping to grow our business with franchise fees and royalties, helping a woman own her own diva dance in her community, but helping a woman bring the authentic community feel to the market versus me just having a lot of corporate locations where I'm like running it and pulling strings from afar. So these are women that are truly built. They're the glue of their community. It's just the most authentic way to do it. So that is when I decided that franchising was for me. And I leveraged some family relationships we had to find a great mentor. The franchising industry is great. People are very generous with their time and their knowledge, very abundance mindset. Even if you went to them with a similar concept, they're not going to be like, oh, I'm not going to talk to you. They're very, very sharing and they really want to bring people in. And so I just started really embedding myself in the franchising industry and utilizing that wonderful family friend who was my initial mentor. He had helped other businesses franchise. He did all of our initial legal paperwork. I knew nothing about all of the above before I started franchising, but I chose franchising really so that we could scale the brand in. Now that was a strategic move. Scale the brand in a strategic way while helping other women create a business for themselves.
Well, and what I love about what you've built is it allows people to see what's possible for themselves and it allows them to really like have their own business that they are so much a part of because their personality and their building of the community locally is what's going to determine its success. And so you've really done a great job, not only finding the right franchise owners, but then mentoring and training them. Can you just share a little bit about like, I kind of want to take like a little franchise segue because I don't know that many people who want to be entrepreneurs even consider why it would be such a great benefit. Can you explain franchising? But really, I want you to explain it through the lens of Diva Dance because you have some unique things about how your franchise model works that makes it more accessible and affordable for people.
Well, when you think about franchising, most people think about food. You know, they think about restaurants and they think about food. What people don't realize is that anything can be a franchise. You really can. And what franchising just means is that you're basically licensed the ability to use the brand and the systems and the processes that I have road tested, that I have spent a lot of time and money. And this is why franchising is awesome, because if someone were to try to create their own dance brand from complete scratch, it would cost them $1 million, literally. Like it would really, it's much harder than people realize because there's so much to it. And not, you know, not just like having a cute brand and a cute website, but you have to have a sales system. You have to have a system for how you hire and train your workers. You have to have a lead generation, a marketing machine. There's so much that you have to have a tech stack. There's so much to it, you know, that's more than what people think. And so franchising allows you to basically say, hey, I know you've already put in all this work. Let me get him. I want a piece of it. I want to do this too, but I don't want to have done all the work that you did. But the great thing about it is that a franchisee then still gets so much, depending on the brand, but so much autonomy in their own market, in their own business. So for us, that means my franchisees hire their own instructors. They hire their people. I don't say who they can and cannot hire. We'll give them feedback or we'll look at videos or whatever and give them some coaching. But you know, it's really that's their people. That's their culture. Class schedule is major. So at Diva Dance, all of our classes are different songs, different styles, as long as it's mainstream and recognizable and fun. And our franchisees can customize those based on their vision for their market and for this type of folks that, you know, if this is a crowd that's more of a throwback crowd, then maybe you have more of those types of things on your schedule. If this is more, Latin music type of crowd, whatever it is, that's the franchisee has to bring that natural instinct in their market to that business. And then you're also choosing how hard you're going to work. You're really, you know, and this is why franchising is also interesting because I'm not their boss. We are partners. And this is why royalties are part of franchising because their success is my success. And I want them to do well, but I'm also not their boss. And that's an interesting nuance because a lot of folks who do decide to franchise or become a franchisee, they've been employees their whole career. They don't fully understand how to become an entrepreneur. And that's why I think franchising is a beautiful middle ground between being an employee, being in corporate, having to be a 9-to-5 and work for people and take your vacation days, but also you don't have that burden of having to create everything from scratch. So I think it's a really beautiful middle ground to be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, have the control and freedom and flexibility. And in our model, we do have a couple of options, as you kind of alluded to. You can have a dedicated brick and mortar studio if your intention is to be full-time in the business and to truly, you know, you're capitalized so that you can do that. Or we do have a model that this is your side business. Now, your financial expectations for what that's going to do for you have to also be commensurate with that. You know, it's not too many things in the world can you put completely part-time effort in and get completely full-time results back. So we do have that kind of option for folks, as long as folks come in, are capitalized accordingly, and they're also time capitalized accordingly.
And the time capitalized, I mean, every entrepreneur should be thinking about that when they get started, when they're getting things going. And even as the business is continuing to operate, you have to be so mindful about your own time, what you delegate, what you hire for. And so I really love that in finding your right partners, you're asking them those kinds of questions, because I think everyone needs to be asking themselves those questions. Before we get to like current day and what the company looks like now, I want to talk about if you can remember any moments early on in the business where you really thought like you might throw in the towel and it was maybe going to be the end. And how did you get through that, or, you know, motivate yourself over the hump to the other side?
Well, we had this mentor, as I mentioned, who really was our everything mentor for years. And he was kind of our shepherd. And I remember, and everyone, how we had talked to him about, because again, I've always bootstrapped this. And he was very, he's passed away now, but he was a little old school and very much like, well, you don't want to take on any loans. You don't want to take on any debt, you know, and he did that to discipline us to be very lean. And I have mixed feelings about that now. I'm like, man, if we had just had more capital, like where would we be now? And, you know, but that wasn't our journey, right? That wasn't the movie that we had to live. But there was one specific phone call I remember. It was my very first time when we just like were running out of money. And what that meant at the time was that, like, I mean, I wasn't really paying myself anything at that time, but we did have other obligations that we had. You know, you have insurance, and you're not even health insurance, you have business insurance, and you have obligations as a business, no matter what kind of business you have. And it normally he had an answer for us. He would say like, well, okay, well, why don't we not pay this invoice and we'll pay this one instead. And it was the first conversation, I think it was like 2018. And it was the first time that he just said, well, I guess this might just be the end. Like he kind of, not that explicitly, but he kind of alluded to like, well, you're out of options. And I just remember like not accepting that. I very clearly remember being like, this can't be the end. Like, what are you talking about? Like, there's no way. And I just had this fire in me of like, I'm going to figure this out. And that's just how I roll. I'm going to figure this out. You know, the other interesting thing that happened around that time was we signed a franchise. This is actually a horrible story that like I can laugh about now, but we signed a franchisee at the time. We have very different processes now for like how we collect payments and fees and things like that. But she seemed amazing. She was all in. She would have been my second franchisee. And so of course I was like, oh my gosh, we sold another franchise. This is so exciting. And long story short, she wrote us her check and we deposited it. And then like 30 days later, my then business partner calls me and she goes, the bank account's overdrawn by $10,000. And I was like, what? And like her check bounced. The freaking check bounced, which is like, is that even a thing nowadays? Well, it's not anymore because we do ACH now. So like, there's no checks bouncing. But that was the moment where I panicked. I was like, because then I'm questioning everything. I'm like, okay, A, we're overdrawn by $10,000. Like, that's a lot of money. B, like this woman has defrauded us basically. Like she has, you know, and so then I'm spiraling, you know, because I'm like, oh my gosh, now I got to go talk to her. And it was a whole long thing. And we ended up terminating her agreement and sending her on her way. We didn't take any other action, you know, but look, I'm very privileged to be able to like call a family member and be like, I need help. Can you float me a few shekels to get us through? And, you know, those are some very key moments. I just remember the like defeat and the panic, but immediate switch to resolve. And like, I'm going to figure this out. And then obviously COVID, you know, that goes without being said. You know, I'll never forget Friday, March 13th, 2020. I'll never forget that day was the day that I said, we're switching to online class. We're going to live stream. we're going to live stream. And I'll never forget, I taught Doja Cat Boss Bitch. And this is before we all had on masks and everything like that. Of course, a week later, we're all masked up and everything shut down. But I was like, we got to start live streaming. We don't have a choice. We got to start live streaming. And I'll never forget it. We just turned the camera on and just started broadcasting. And we ended up powering through COVID. So those are, I mean, I have many other moments, but those are like three very key moments that I'm like, this is it. This is over. I mean, COVID definitely, I was like, this is it. It's over. And I was mad because I was ready that year to have just like a game changing year. But we powered through. We made it. We didn't fold. Like, we made it work, as many businesses did, and many businesses didn't, unfortunately, but we did make it work. But definitely you have those moments, but you have to have that resilience muscle to be like, this is hard. This sucks. We're going to figure it out.
I'm so glad that you shared some of those really like personal early day things, because I think there's probably listeners who have had something overdraft for a couple hundred dollars and they're thinking this is the end, you know? And it really is about being realistic and looking what's in front of you, but also having that like faith in yourself, you know, and in your idea. Right?
If you don't have that, you are not going to make it as an entrepreneur, period. You won't. You have to have almost scary self-confidence. Like, it's almost like you have to be almost delusional. If I'm being completely honest, you have to be borderline delusional to be an entrepreneur.
And I think you also have to be aware of when you need help. Like, I know you said it's a privileged situation. I share that a lot in my journey too. Like, I have many moments of privilege where I could go to a family member or whoever and get help. But I think a lot more people than they think of themselves have someone they could call on for help. And maybe it's not even always monetary, right? It could be like, I feel like I'm drowning and I feel alone. I need someone to like get coffee with me. Or, you know, it's all these things where when everything as an entrepreneur feels like it's on your shoulders and there's no one in your corner, that's when you do have to reach out to people in your life and get that help.
You don't have a choice, because protecting your own mental health as an entrepreneur, I know it's corny, but the whole like put your mask on first thing, like it's actually like science. Like, if you do not self-preserve, you will go under. Like, you will. And so, yeah, you're right about even just being specific with people about what you need, even if it's just like, hey, I need to talk through something. Do you have 5 minutes? Or, you know, and even knowing those people you truly trust and being just completely honest with them when they say, how you doing? You say, you know, I mean, I'm an eternal optimist and I'm always like, no matter what's going on in my life, like, it's going to be fine. I'm going to make it. But like, I'm trying to do a better job at being like, you know what? Shit's really hard right now. I know it's going to be fine, but it's hard right now. And that's really key. And yeah, so I think it's good to talk about these specific moments, because I remember when I got the call about the overdraft, I remember being like, this is it. It's over. There's no way I'm going to recover. You know, like, what's the Tiger King thing where it's like, I will never financially recover from this, whatever the Tiger King said. But like, you will. And you did. But the other thing too, is it keeps you humble, because I'm like, well, I know there will be more of those things. So it's almost like, you know, there will be more. So when they do happen, you're like less surprised by it.
Yeah. Well, and I do think so many entrepreneurs who have been doing it for years and years, you hear that from all of them, right? Like, I've never heard an entrepreneur who's been in business for years tell me, yeah, it's been super smooth. Like, that's just not the narrative, you know?
And if you want it to be, entrepreneurship is just not for you. It's just not. If you, in anything you do, nothing's going to be super smooth, but like, if you want predictability, then there are definitely jobs out there for you. There are definitely ways to make money that are for you, where you go in, you do your job, you clock out. And for some people, that is right for them. I am not one of those people.
Totally. And you know, you were hustling so hard before Diva Dance was even full time for you, and you still do now. I mean, I see you subbing in for classes all the time. Like, you wear all the hats still. But I do feel like I saw a more external shift once you became a mom. Just like, you know, there's another really important thing in your life that requires a lot of time and energy. Can you just share with everyone like the journey as an entrepreneur of deciding to have kids and how that maybe shifted how you show up for Diva Dance?
Well, I put it off for many years. I didn't have my kids until after I was 40, my first daughter at 41, my second at 43. And I put it off because I just had other things on the top of my agenda. And time goes by very fast. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm 40. Ooh, I should probably like figure this out now. I should probably do this. And, but for my entire 30s, I was like, later. I can't think about that right now. So even something as funny as like, even my husband this week was like, hey, do you want me to renew your driver's license to help you? Cause I know it's going to, and I'm like, I can't think about that right now. Like I have to like block out certain things. I'm like, I can't think about that. And so that's how I was with having kids. I was like, I can't think about that right now. Not that I'm equating having kids to renewing my driver's license, but kind of, because I had to compartmentalize things. And so we just put it off for a long time. And then, you know, I knew it was the right timing to explore that. And, you know, we had to do some fertility things. I was an older mom, whatever they call it, advanced maternal age, et cetera. And luckily I had put some really good systems in place. The good news about franchising too, is that it's a very clear system. And when you have very clear systems and kind of framework for how the business goes, it does truly create the freedom you want. It's very different than being self-employed. Self-employed means when you don't work, you don't make money. Being a business owner means that even if you don't work, you will make money. And so that's what I felt very fortunate. I had some good team members who were able to, and we had great systems in place where I was able to take those maternity leaves and truly do that for my kids. But since then, it's not even every day that I wake up and I'm like, I want to be the best person I can be for my kids. As much as I want to say that, here's what it actually is. I don't fucking have time not to be. Like, I don't have time. So every day I'm like, I got to be efficient. I got to be present. I got to be on. I got to do the things. But, and like, obviously, yes, of course I want to be a great mom and I want to be present and I want them to have great memories. But I also want them to see that I work hard, that I'm creating assets for our family, that I'm changing people's lives through this business I've created, and that I have fun. I have fun and I love my work. The other major thing I need them to see is my amazing partnership with my husband. That there's no way I could do this without him. And for folks who are entrepreneurs, who are also parents, if you don't have a great rock solid partner, you may have to take a look at that before you do anything else, because I have a rock solid partner who empowers me and celebrates me to go out. And we are in this very specific season of our family's life where we're in asset creation. We are in asset creation. This is the chapter we're in. This is the era we're in, because if 10 years from now, I don't do that now and take care of our health, those are two very important chapters we're in right now. If we don't do that, 10 years from now is not going to look how we want it to. And so I have an amazing partner and I just have to be very time efficient. And that also means like quality. So when I am with my girls, I want to be present. I want to be silly. I want to be having fun. I want to be asking them questions. And so being a mom has just, it made me better in a million ways, especially just empathy for others and just validation, compassion, just all those yummy things that were also deprioritized. For me, I was mostly just in like create and you know, produce mode and achieve mode. And then when you become accountable for someone else's life and like their whole well-being, it just draws out this other human side that's really important too.
Do you remember struggling in the beginning with like feeling really guilty? Because I feel like you're in a stage now where you, your partner and your girls like know what the plan is. And so I don't feel like I see guilt. Like, you know that when you're with them, you're doing your thing, you're giving them all that you can. And when you're not, it's for them. But I feel like mentally you had to maybe get there over time.
It's not guilt so much as like, I really like them and I want to hang out with them. You know what I mean? It's guilt to me means like, well, I'm doing this other thing that I'd rather be doing. And I feel bad that I'm not with these, but it's actually the opposite for me. Like, I actually like really want to hang out with them and I feel sad. Like this weekend I'm doing something amazing. I'm launching Diva Dance San Francisco, which is a huge, is our first one in California. It's kind of an OG Diva Dance client from New York City, an amazing woman named Nora. She's our franchisee. It's a big deal. But like, I'm sad that I have to leave my girls on Valentine's Day. You know, I'm sad that I want to hang out with them. They're my little peeps. They're my little besties. And so, and I love our family. So it's less of guilt. And I actually do feel wife guilt sometimes, because I'm like, man, I feel bad that like he's doing this thing. But again, we have a great partnership. We've created some good systems for ourselves where we, you know, even like by Friday night, the week prior, we have our schedules updated. We have like systems for how we do things. And, you know, even a couple weeks ago, I'm like, oh, let me take the girls to Houston for the weekend. We'll do a little fun girls weekend. You can have the weekend off. And so it's less of guilt and more just, I genuinely like my family and want to hang out with them.
I really like that reframing, because I feel like that's what a lot of parents and moms and entrepreneurs feel. but they like process it different inside, the way they talk to themselves about it. So I really like that framing. It's not about guilt. It's like, I do wish I was spending time with them, but, or maybe we say, and
I love
these other
job.
Things I'm doing are for them.
Well,
right.
I love Diva Dance. Both things can be true. You can love being a parent and having an amazing family, and you can love your job. And I grew up in an era in the 80s when it was like workaholic. Like that was like the term that was coined in that time where like you're a workaholic. And I'm like, well, I am a workaholic, but I'm also a momaholic. You know, like I love being a mom and I love being with my family. But I do genuinely love Diva Dance. I love what I'm doing here. I love building this business. I love that I'm creating assets for my family. And maybe I'll be in a different place, hopefully 10 years from now, when I'm like, you know what, that's that era. I'm in a different era then, maybe, when I'm like, well, I don't care about as much working as much, and I only want to hang out with my then teenage daughters, you know, which is a little scary. But yeah, I know. I'm like, no. But yeah, I mostly just like love my family and want to hang out with them. But also love my job.
And I like that as a family, you're in an era, you've communicated it, and you're prioritizing certain things. Like that is how you can show up better in all areas of your life when you know what the North Star is and what is the top priority at this time. I want to transition to your physical health because I can't believe I wasn't even like planning on us talking to that, but that is huge right now, huge in your life, huge in how you've even been showing up online. Tell us about this phase, this period. I don't even want to call it a phase. It's a major shift in your life over the past few years.
Yeah, I really, you know, one big thing is that seeing my dad, he's in amazing health and he's 83 years old. Amazing. He was an NCAA college basketball official for his entire career, ran up and down. But my mom and I quantified it one time. We were like, dad has run, I don't remember what it was, like 500,000 miles in his life from up and down the basketball court. And my dad had did all the things. You know, we made fun of him. Again, it was the 80s. So we made fun of him. He was a health nut. You know, my mom and I'd be ordering, you know, certain food at dinner and he'd be getting the grilled chicken with the broccoli. And I see what it has done for him. And he is very able-bodied, very high energy, you know, very just like handsome and young and like just vibrant, you know? And I see that and I'm like, that's not by accident. He did that. But on the converse, like bless my mother, she's the same age. I mean, a couple even years younger, not in as great of health. Now I'm grateful to have them both still with us and call them every day. And like I'm obsessed with them, but like my mom can't walk. She is in a wheelchair now. And like, she's not in, you know, the best of health. And I see those two, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, I was like, I miss the old version of my mom that could like be rocking and rolling and up and about and like, you know, doing all the things. And I'm like, I will do whatever I got to do to not do that. I want to be like my dad, you know, and I owe that to my girls. I want to have a long life because I started late as a parent. So I'm like, I want to make sure I have as many years with my girls as I can and having fun with them. And so that was when I'm like, well, what I need to run my health like a business. So that's when I just got more intentional about my blood work and KPIs and like all the numbers in your health. Running your health like a business is something I don't think entrepreneurs, we don't realize we need to do, but like we're fully capable of doing it because we know what KPIs are. And so I started regularly checking my A1C, checking my glucose, checking my, you know, my triglycerides and my cholesterol and like things that we don't get in the full panel. It's super easy to do. You know, I've started working with a nutritionist over the last year. I use an app called Nourish that my health insurance pays for. And they also pay for the blood work to get done. And so just kind of making that part of my SOP as a human, as my standard operating procedure as a human, is I have to do that. And obviously my weight has always been something that, you know, has been a little bit of a concern because obviously, again, growing up in the 80s and 90s, it was like, oh, you know, your body needs to look a certain way. And now nowadays it's less about how you need to look and more about what body weight impacts what's going on underneath. So like your visceral fat around your organs, like not to get all sciencey and health, but it's like, it's fat. It's science. It's facts. You know, it's like you need to make sure that these certain things are where they need to be so that you have longevity. And again, I'm a dancer. I want to be able to dance forever. If there is a point in the future where I can't dance, it will really impact my mental health. And so I want to prevent injury. It's all just like, not even to be like, I want to be thin. Cause like, I feel like I look great. Like it would take a lot for me to be like, I don't look good. Like I, you know, it's not about that. It's about what's going on inside my body that will allow me to have the longevity and the life I want in the long run. So that's really where I've started thinking more and just being more transparent about running my health like a business.
I think it's a great way to think about it because I think so often as Americans, especially prioritizing ourselves, whether it's physical health or mental health, it's almost like we've been told that that's something you only do when you have the time and the resources. And it's like, well, actually, that's what you do if you want to be able to keep doing this thing longer, you know?
And that's how I looked at it. There was a quote. It was funny because I read this quote. It was Beyonce in an interview, and they were interviewing her about, I don't remember what it was exactly, but they had a plate of brownies there. They had a plate of brownies and they were like, oh, do you want a brownie? Do you ever indulge? And she basically was like, it's part of my job not to, is basically what she was saying. And it's not about her being like, I don't eat brownies, like not from like a righteous perspective, but from a strategic perspective. It's like, well, it's part of my job. Like, I don't do that. Not never, but like, I don't need this brownie right now, you know? And so again, it's less about like, I don't care how like big somebody's body is. It's about the numbers underneath it. And so it's not about appearance. It's really about the health and the numbers underneath it and what you need that to be. Again, just like a business, what do you need your profit to be? What do you need your key measurables in your business to be? Same thing with your health so that you can achieve this other outcome. And I just got more clarity on that over the last couple of years, especially seeing the very different tracks of my mom and dad and being like, well, I want to be like that because my dad is living an awesome life and I want that.
Yeah, well, and anyone, whether they're trying to change their physical health, their financial health, whatever it is, paying attention to the data is always going to help you. And I think, you know, you and I have talked about this many times. My mind is always blown at how many business owners don't run a profit and loss sheet. Like I don't think I'll ever be able to wrap my brain around that. But I do think that we can tell everyone that if you're trying to fix something, anything, money, health, whatever, paying attention to the data is really the only way to get started because that's how you're going to make changes.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because that kind of takes me to about a year ago in our business when, you know, obviously we've been going about 9 years, we're at about 50 franchises, we're doing, you know, 3 million annually in HQ revenue, not system wide, but like at my HQ and by all intents and purposes, it's like, okay, that's really great. That's amazing. But I'm sitting there and I'm like, it feels like we could be doing a lot more. Like it feels like this should be so much bigger even. And so what I started to do was question my own limiting beliefs and be like, why is this not 30 million? Why is this not 300 locations? And I started studying other brands that were at that place, one of which is a brand called Burn Bootcamp, who I really just, those founders, it's a husband and wife, co-founders that I really just emulate, just how they run their business, you know, the published EBITDA that they have on, I mean, they have $11 million in very public EBITDA that they put in their franchise disclosure document. And I'm like, I want that. Like, you know, I want to do that. And so one of the things I studied when looking at their company and understanding more about how they got there, similar business model to ours, you know, very women-focused, membership-based, community-oriented, like so many similarities. They target regular people. They're not trying to find people who are hardcore CrossFit fitness people, regular people. And so I'm like, well, if they did it, I know we can do it. And so one of the things I learned about them was that they had implemented something called the Entrepreneur Operating System. EOS. And it's based on a book called Traction by an author named Gino Wickman. And it is something that's very entrenched in the franchising space. And I have fully drank the Kool-Aid on this. Like reading that book, it's just an incredible framework for how to run your business. And I like systems a lot. So as I was reading it, I'm like, well, this is great. Like you do this. And I'm very much like, if I do this, I will get this outcome. And that's when we started implementing EOS. Now, one of the most important things about EOS is this concept of right people, right seats. And that is the foundation. One of the very first things you do when you're implementing EOS into your business is essentially you fire everybody on the whiteboard. Everybody's fired. You write down the seats you have to have in the business for the business to be successful. And then you rehire people in the seat that makes sense for them. And so it's very much right people, right seats. So making sure you have the right seats, you put the right people in them, and then they what they call GWC. Do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have the capacity to do it? And that was a very eye-opening exercise. And when, you know, 10 years from now, when I look back, Emily, I will be like, implementing EOS was the most critical thing that we could have done to achieve literally anything after that. And so as part of that over the last year, it's been the hardest year in the whole business, despite the financial things in other eras, despite even more than COVID, it was the hardest year because I had to really face some decisions I had made over the last few years, both in hiring, in spending, in things that they call at EOS sacred cows. Like, this is how you always do it. Well, this is how we always do it. It's a sacred cow. You start to question, like, well, why do we do it that way? And there's so much. This is a must read book for any entrepreneur. And I'm not out there just slinging books to people, because I know our time is limited, you know? And so I'm not out there like, you should read this and you should read this. This one, you got to read. Because and Atomic Habits, those are my two. But Traction, it's just, it makes sense. And so we started doing that process. And as I've shared with you, you know, we had to make some really hard moves, one of which was parting ways with my essentially founding partner. She didn't help me found the brand, but she helped me with, you know, co-founding essentially the franchising business. And that was extremely difficult for everybody. Especially this is a person who's like, this is like my sister, you know, she's not, but like basically. And, you know, there was other moves we had to make over the last year of helping people transition out of the company. And from the outside looking in, some people may look at it and say, oh, well, their lead people are leaving, things are in turmoil, oh, things aren't good. And I've heard a couple rumblings of that, of like, people think we're like not doing well, when it's literally so the opposite. It's like, no, I'm tightening up. And the biggest reason I parted ways with my then partner, or former partner, is that financial piece. You know, I had her in the wrong seat. And if she was on this show as a guest, she would be like, I was in the wrong seat. This was not what I do, you know, but I had her in this like financial oversight seat that really, it did her a disservice. It did us a disservice. And that has been the most incredible game-changing decision that we could have made, that I made as the founder and in that seat. And I'm still experiencing like the fallout from that. And we're still, you know, kind of stabilizing. And I'm having to do things like, okay, I got to look at all the bank accounts every day. And I'm like meeting with the insurance companies about like planning for our premiums. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this stuff. But it has forced me as the CEO and as the founder to get into the things that really are critical to the business, not just like, well, that's somebody else. Like, no, it is all me. It's all ultimately accountable. I'm at the top of the accountability chart. It is all ultimately accountable to me. And I take that accountability more seriously than I ever did. So that's the most recent kind of game-changing move that, you know, hopefully when you and I talk again, you know, in the future, I'll be like, oh my gosh, this is all the good things coming from that.
Totally. But I mean, when you first shared this with me, the thing that stuck out the most to me was, even though this is early days and like the hard part is kind of what you're sitting in, you were already thinking like, okay, yeah, I have to do more work, but it means I can actually start paying myself. And that means I can actually start doing things in my personal life that allow me to spend time on this additional work. Can you just talk through how you do that? Because to me, like, that's kind of how I operate. Like, I'm always trying to optimize how I'm mentally perceiving things and how I'm spending my time. And you're really like in the thick of that emotional and physical tasking of like, what do I need to do every day with less staff?
I think that as entrepreneurs, it's some sort of badge of honor to not pay ourselves. Like, well, I didn't pay myself for 5 years. And I'm kind of like, why the fuck not? Like, why not? Like, you know, and I understand there's definitely a period of time where like you have to be very, very thrifty. And yes, you are the obvious place that you could contract on your spending. And by no means am I saying that a founder or an entrepreneur should never pay themselves, or you need to give yourself a $200,000 a year salary. You need to pay yourself a fair wage. That is, to me, the most important thing. And that may change in what fair wage means in your life. And that's all I basically, for many years, I didn't even pay myself a fair wage. And what that does as a founder is it puts a lot of pressure on you outside of the business. And what I've done over the last couple of years is I've tried to pay myself more, not so that I can take lavish vacations or have nicer handbags, but I've hired a home assistant who comes to my house every week. They tidy toys, they wash my dishes, they take out my trash, they fold laundry, they do the things that, like, and I come home and I'm like, thank you, God, that this is done. And that's when I can be more present for my girls, because I'm not like frustrated that the toys are out, whatever. And so that I invested in, it's actually very reasonable and accessible financially to do, you know, depending on your city and the services you have available to you. The one that I work with has been really game changing. So that's an example of something that I'm like, okay, this I've got to do to spend money to preserve. Other things, meal prep service, house cleaner. Like, there's a few things like that that I'm like, this is what I need to pay myself more
to be able to allocate to, so that not so that I can put on the, oh, well, I have a meal prep person. It's like, no, I have to freaking feed myself so that I can go do these other things. And so I think that, again, it's a badge of honor for entrepreneurs sometimes to be like, well, I didn't pay myself for 8 years. It's like, well, why not? You know, what's going on in your business model that you didn't pay yourself at all for all that time? And then really about like a fair wage for yourself. Now, my husband works for the company full-time also. So we have kind of a double responsibility to be like, okay, well, we need to pay, this is our income. Like, we have to make sure we have enough money to afford those things. And I think for the last few years, I'm like, well, I need to hire these people because there's something, I don't know what it is. There was something in my mind of like, well, I can't pay myself more. I need to hire more people at the company and I want to try to pay them a fair wage. And then what I've done over the last year with this, like right people, right seats, is as people have left, I have definitely, we have just not filled the seat. Either as people have left, either voluntarily they found a new role for them, which I'm super happy for, or I eliminated the role, or we mutually agreed this, we needed to make this change. I either have not reallocated, like I haven't filled the seat. And it's funny how I'm like, I haven't filled the seat, but like, we're still fine. Like we're surviving without this seat, this role. And so having more clarity on like what is critical in the business and what is like more optional. And then also just being able to reallocate some of that back to trying to profit, like back to our bottom line. And then also reallocating it to my family so that I can then be even bigger and better in the business because some of my basic things at home are outsourced. So that's a big thing I would say to entrepreneurs, especially folks who have little kids or any kids or family, is making sure you're paying yourself enough so that you can delegate or outsource or automate some things at home so that you can show up in your business.
And I really like this concept of like pausing before you backfill or like hire for roles that existed. And it doesn't mean the business is pausing. You're still holding your classes. You're still supporting new franchises. But it is about like, I don't need to rush to replace this person because it was a job at our company. Like, let's see if we actually need it or what do we need? Maybe it's not that role. Maybe it's some modification of other things. So,
or you can find a consultant that's even, you know, and there's times to hire. This is a big lesson for an entrepreneur. You've got to really know when you need an employee and when you need a contractor. They're very different. And we have this thing about this, again, this not just the badge of honor of not paying yourself, but there's also somehow this weird badge of honor of how big your team is. It's like, oh, well, I have 15 employees. It's like, well, maybe you don't need 15 employees, you know? And so that's just something I'm really proud of myself for doing the work, because over the last like year, I've really, again, questioned the sacred cows. Even just something like, do I need a dedicated social media and content person that's an employee? Because employees cost a lot of money. People don't understand. It's not just their salary. It's the taxes. It's their health insurance or other benefits you provide. You have to feed them at the team meals. You have to fly them to the places. You got to buy them the t-shirts. And like, you know, you got to get them the Christmas gifts. And they cost a lot of money. You got to give them a computer. There's a lot more to an employee than people realize. And so what I've learned over the last couple months is I'm like, I probably can just have a contractor do that thing. So just kind of questioning my own sacred cows. And there's also been a really fun thing where like I've stepped back into some things that have really helped the business. Content is one of those. I love making content. I actually love editing. I have a very clear vision of like what kind of content we need to have out there on the brand. And so since our, you know, kind of dedicated employee of a social media person found a new job, great opportunity for herself, I've been like, well, I can do it. And I'm not saying that just because you can, you always should. But this is an example of I'm like, I don't need to fill this seat yet. Like, I got it.
Sometimes hiring a contractor helps you get to know them. And then maybe down the road, you decide it's a good fit, but the commitment is so much like lower. It kind of is like having a brick and mortar to me, right? Like the brick and mortar is like the full-time employee and the contractor is like renting space.
So true. Your partners. Yes. So true. So true. And again, I had these limiting beliefs or these like narratives that I created. I'm like, well, unless they're an employee, I won't be able to command certain deliverables out of them. Or like, that just may mean you're not managing your contractors well enough, or you're not finding the right people, or you're not giving them the right scope of work, or you're not having the right accountability tools. But now that we are on EOS, there's a scorecard every week. There's very clear accountability for folks for things. And so it just makes it less dependent on like employee control. And the economic impact of kind of reassessing my labor model at my own HQ, my own company, it's already been very significant impact on the business.
Yeah. Jamie, you have shared so much. To close us out, I feel like the best thing is to ask you right now, what do you do when everything feels like, holy moly, my day just exploded? Like, how do you recenter? How do you restabilize? How do you get through the day so that you can show up the next day with better energy?
Well, first of all, I get a giant crispy Diet Coke. That's a given. That's a must. And I definitely try to find time in my day to dance. Like I will try to, you know, make sure I'm teaching that week on the schedule. Like today, after this, I'm teaching today and I can't freaking wait for that class. It's going to be so fun. And that's an hour where I'm not only helping other people, but like I'm helping myself. And I tell everybody at class, I'm like, I'm so glad y'all came, but even if you didn't, I would still be here. And so I'm very fortunate that I have at least two or three spots in my week that I get to dance. And I have access to dance classes every day, every single day. So knowing what dance does in my life and for my mental health and my cardio and all that yummy stuff, that is non-negotiable. And then honestly, and this is going to sound super corny, but like I have a giant camera roll of like amazing photos and videos of my girls. And that brings me like the absolute, like they're just the best. So when people ask me like, oh, how are your kids? I'm like, they're just the best. They're the best. You know, and so that it's a Diet Coke. It is doom scrolling my content of my kids, and then making sure I get to dance. Those are non-negotiables.
Doom scrolling your own content. This is a new thing. We're gonna start that. I love that idea.
I'll literally go through my own camera roll, and I'm just like, like, and even yeah, like even old screen grabs or whatever.
So much better than going on social media. Way better than going on social media.
And my camera roll is literally my children or dance. That's it. That's all that's in my camera roll. And it's really, really just joy. Honestly, my camera roll is just joy, 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 joy.
I love it. Jamie, you're amazing. I'm so glad you could be a launch guest because your story, your personality, everything is just like exactly what we're looking for on Success Rewritten. So thank you so much for making the time and sharing like some really hard moments that I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs keep secret because it feels like failure, but really it's just a part of the journey.
Well, let's make sure we demystify that together. And like anybody listening, if you want to reach out, DM me anytime, hit me on LinkedIn. Let's commiserate. Let's go.
You're the best. I'm going to link all the Diva Dance franchise stuff in the show notes. And if anyone is new here, please subscribe to the channel. We'd really appreciate it. And check out Diva Dance. They're on all social media. You can see all the fun classes and you can even find a local location near you.
And last fun fact, Emily, by the way, is that I just recently, after 10 years, I got divadance.com. And so that's the moral of that story to anybody out there. Don't give up on your dream domain name.
Was someone just, they owned it, but they weren't using it.
Exactly. And she had this other kind of concept. She had it under a different trademark category. Anyways, I mean, it's a long story. We could record a whole podcast over, but she ultimately gave it to me. I didn't have to buy it or anything. So I'll leave everybody with divadance.com and don't give up on your dream domain name.
I love it. That was great. Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Please be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and whatever listening platform you prefer. It's also amazing if you can like and review the show. It's also great to share the content with someone in your network you might think finds it helpful. All of these things help us to better grow our audience and get Success Rewritten in front of more people. We'd also love to hear from you, so comment below if you have feedback on the episode, or reach out to me directly if you want to talk about future episodes and things we should cover. My email is emily@successrewrittenshow.com. You can also find me on social media at WashCovid. And if you want to learn more about the show itself, go to successrewrittenshow.com. We'll see you next time.